Good morning. It's just after 8 a.m. You're listening to KVNF, and this is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick. A bipartisan committee of 12 Colorado lawmakers will soon meet to examine the state's response to September's devastating floods along the Front Range. As Benta Berkland reports, improving communications and phone access during emergencies will be one topic of discussion.
Washed out roads and bridges blocked access in some flood-stricken communities, and in many cases, people were also cut off from telephone and internet service. Republican Senator Kevin Lundberg of Berthoud represents many of the towns affected by the floods, including Estes Park. He says some people still don't have good, reliable phone service.
And I do wonder whether we've got the right telecommunications policies in place to ensure a quick recovery.
The lack of broadband access in rural parts of the state has long been a focus at the Capitol. Lawmakers on the Flood Recovery Study Committee will also examine how well the state is rebuilding roads, bridges, and other infrastructure.
What about relief efforts for small businesses, tourism, families? Are we doing what we're supposed to be doing?
Lundberg is one of the lawmakers on the committee, which is evenly split between the parties. Democratic Senator Jeannie Nicholson of Blackhawk says it's too soon to say what lawmakers will want to change.
Until we hear people's reports to us about what worked and what are some challenges on the ground, this was a really devastating disaster for a whole lot of people. And I think there are some lessons to be learned from it.
Nicholson says she wants to focus on helping people who may have lost everything or who are really struggling. She talked to one woman whose ceiling is caving in but can't get federal aid because it was caused by rain and not the flooding.
Many people didn't have flood insurance that covered flood damage. We may want to kind of work through how do we handle that aspect of it.
At one point, Governor John Hickenlooper was considering a special legislative session to respond to the flooding, but now says most issues can be handled by lawmakers as they come up and into next year. The Flood Relief Committee will hold its first meeting in early November. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Capitol coverage is funded by the Gill Foundation's Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud supporter of local organizations like the Colorado Department of Education and its programs to prepare and inspire the next generation of science, technology, engineering, and math teachers.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that nearly 25 logging and trucking contractors for the Montrose Forest Products Company were out of work during the recent government shutdown. During the shutdown, the U.S. Forest Service didn't allow work on timber contracts in area forests. As the Daily Sentinel reports, production at the sawmill north of Montrose was cut short for 2 weeks at what officials there say was a crucial time of the year. Mid-October is when the mill gathers stockpiles for at least 12 weeks, since forest logging is suspended during the spring thaw. Norm Bircher, the mill's resource forester, said production could shut down for a couple of weeks during the spring because of the lost time to harvest logs. Though Bircher says some of the contracting crews at the mills were able to temporarily move to private lands during the shutdown, the mill employs about 90 people, plus around another 60 who work in trucking, logging, and road building. According to the Daily Sentinel, the shutdown also affected the Hotchkiss-based company West Range Reclamation, which works in forest health and fuels reduction. The company works under some federal stewardship contracts. West Range had around 60 employees working across the state and 10 at its Hotchkiss office as of early August. The Maroon Bells was one of the many national forest areas that took a big financial hit from the government shutdown this month. As a result, there might be some cutbacks at the Maroon Bells next year. The Forest Service lost revenue because it was unable to collect entrance fees. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher has the details.
Scott Fitzwilliams oversees the White River National Forest, and he describes the shutdown as cantankerous.
It was difficult. I mean, especially at the time of year this came about. I mean, part of fall in the valley is going to Maroon Bells and having to shut that down and close the bathrooms and facilities.
Not to mention closing the road going up to the Bells to cars and buses. That meant the fee station was closed, and the dollars that helped pay for the services at the Maroon Bells went uncollected.
It probably will affect this $20,000 or $30,000 for next year's operating budget. You know, we closed the doors during our most busy time as far as the Maroon Bells, as far as the fee program, and we're not going to be able to make that up.
All told, the result of the shutdown could mean more than 10% of the Maroon Bell's annual budget. Fitzwilliams believes the loss will probably have the longest-lasting effect on the White River National Forest. Another result is damaged relationships with contractors. At least three companies had to stop logging in the middle of a project and lost income. Since the government reopened, timber contractors have been able to get up and running again. Forest Service employees are also back to work. Facing a backlog, some employees could need longer hours to catch up. That, says Fitzwilliams, could be a problem. The agency is being cautious with approving overtime. Forest Service managers don't know how much money they'll have next year because current funding only goes through January.
So we're being very conservative about spending money without a long-term budget.
Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
Yesterday, Republican U.S. Representative Cory Gardner of Yuma sent Colorado officials a list of questions about problems with the state's new online health exchange. As the Denver Post reports, Gardner sent a letter to the state exchange saying he was gearing up for a hearing in Washington, D.C. with federal contractors, where Gardner plans to list off a series of glitches and delays with the new websites across the country. Gardner pointed out that of the 18,000 people who have registered for accounts in Colorado, only 226 have actually bought insurance policies as of last week. According to the Post, other states are enrolling people in the new exchanges at a much faster rate than Colorado. Delta County Treasurer Lisa Tavoya visited commissioners on Monday to obtain permission to close her office at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, November 6th, in order to prepare for the county's annual tax sale the following day, Thursday the 7th. The closure would allow staffers to prepare for the sale, which begins promptly at 10 a.m. in the district courtroom. Properties with outstanding taxes were printed once in the Delta County Independent and are listed on the county treasurer's website, updated every Monday. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more.
Lisa Tafoya has been treasurer for only a month, but she's worked in the office for 6 years and had already announced her decision to run for treasurer in the November 2014 election when she was tapped to replace Jim Ventrilo. Tafoya explains that the county holds the sale in order to get 100% of its property taxes, which must be divvied up among various entities according to mill levies and other agreements. The sale attracts investors who go from county to county buying up the liens.
And normally they're not interested in the property itself, they're interested in the interest that they earn. This year it's 10% per annum, so you know it's less than 1% per month, but it's better than what they can get a lot of times with other investments.
Never fear if you didn't pay your tax yet.
If you didn't make it in prior to tax lien, you can come in at any time after that, but you will pay additional fees.
But if you fail to pay taxes for 4 years, investors may acquire the property itself.
If it's a real piece of property, they've got to pay those taxes for a total of 4 years before they can apply for treasurer's deed.
Tafoya says the county usually has a full house, more than 100 investors for the sale. There are about 300 delinquent properties currently listed on the county website. That's from a total of nearly 20,000 properties in Delta County. Last year, some 240 properties went to tax lien sale. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
This is KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.